Welcome to Clinical Conversations. Pioglitazone increases insulin sensitivity, but has some baggage as a member of the thiazolidinedione class that includes troglitazone and rosiglitazone. The New England Journal of Medicine has just published a study in which the drug was used for secondary prevention of vascular events in patients with insulin resistance and a history of ischemic stroke or TIAs. When tested against placebo in a randomized study, pioglitazone takers had a significantly lower rate of stroke and myocardial infarction. Along with the paper, the journal published an editorial placing all this into useful perspective. The author of that editorial, Dr. Clay Semenkovich, has agreed to talk with Clinical Conversations. Dr. Semenkovich is professor of medicine and of cell biology and physiology at Washington University in St. Louis. And by the title of his editorial, Insulin Resistance and a Long Strange Trip, a Grateful Dead fan. Welcome, Dr. Semenkovich.
Thank you very much.
Review for us what's so worrisome about insulin resistance.
Insulin resistance is worrisome because it is associated with a very large spectrum of abnormalities that promote disease. For example, people who are insulin resistant are often obese. They may have abnormal lipid levels. They may have high glucose levels. They frequently have high blood pressure. And this collection of signs and symptoms is frequently associated with premature vascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes.
So the researchers were careful to include patients with insulin resistance, but to exclude patients who had diabetes. Why might they have excluded the diabetics?
That's correct that they were careful in being discreet in their definition of who would be entered in the trial, and I think that was wise. Once one develops diabetes, I think, tragically, you are on a path to having multiple different organ systems fail. And sometimes that can happen in a very random manner. Sometimes people with diabetes can do quite well, and that's what we hope for all of our patients. But unfortunately, those who develop diabetes, which is arbitrarily designated as a high fasting blood sugar or some other measurements, at that point you have a failure of beta cells, which are the cells in the pancreas that make insulin. And you probably also have other failures of systems that actually will predispose to disease. So by defining their patients as those with insulin resistance who did not have diabetes, they had the possibility of intervening at an earlier point in the progression of a serious disease.
And so insulin resistance normally is a marker on the road to diabetes, but not it's not irreversible. Is that right?
That's exactly correct. There are, in fact, many different ways to treat insulin resistance. It's strikingly common. People with metabolic syndrome have it. Perhaps two-thirds of people in the United States are obese and or overweight, and nearly all of those folks have insulin resistance. And it can be treated by exercising. It can be treated by altering your diet. It can be treated by weight loss and many other interventions as well.
In the trial, they randomized something on the order of 3,900 patients. And they were randomized to placebo or to pioglitazone. And over time, the percentage of people with the outcome of interest, which was stroke or myocardial infarction, was about 4 percentage points higher among those on placebo. Was that right? Is that about right?
I think the absolute risk was about 3 percentage points higher in terms of relative risk. If you were randomized to the pioglitazone, the insulin-sensitizing drug, you were about 25% less likely to develop one of the endpoints, which was heart attack or stroke, which I thought was actually kind of surprising.
Yeah.
These individuals who were enrolled were really provided outstanding care. They were already on antiplatelet agents. They already had good blood pressure control. They were already on statin drugs to lower their cholesterol. And so this was a group of individuals who were getting what was considered to be the standard of outstanding care, and yet this addition of the insulin sensitizer, pioglitazone, provided them some additional benefit, which is interesting.
It had some nasty side effects, though, didn't it?
It does, and this has been known for a long time. This class of drug, thiazolidinedione, have been around for a long time, And they were initially hailed as kind of a metabolic savior because they, in a very molecularly targeted way, could affect many genes that are involved in insulin resistance. The problem was that they, over time, became associated with fluid retention, heart failure, and other side effects that also include abnormalities of bone function. So people who tend to take these drugs are more likely to develop serious bone fractures, which can get you hospitalized and can be very, very lethal.
As the authors were talking, they were talking in terms of the numbers needed to treat. They figure that if they treated 100 patients for 5 years, they would prevent three secondary events. But they would
three strokes or heart attacks. That's right.
Right, but they would also incur two hospitalizations for bone fracture. So I guess a fracture
that's
is
true.
Much. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And that's an important consideration that for any individual patient, the risks and benefits need to be discussed. And I think that one incredibly powerful message of this study is that it provides proof of principle that actually specifically treating insulin resistance can actually result in a beneficial vascular effect, which is something that people substantially fear. And as clinicians know, you have to be careful the way you present information to patients, and you have to respect their point of view about what is important to them and what scares them in terms of risks. Many individuals are absolutely terrified of the notion of a stroke and incurring substantial neurologic deficit. For someone who has some risk of perhaps having a bone fracture but is absolutely terrified of a stroke, perhaps in the right context of that person's life, they would think that additional treatment with pioglitazone would be appropriate. But certainly this shouldn't be used across the board for all these individuals.
You advise caution on the temptation to prescribe the drug for patients in similar circumstances as those in the trial. And you say that many caveats remain. Could you review some of those caveats?
Sure. And again, the clinicians who actually designed the study and the scientists who designed the study did a great job because they were very careful to make sure that the individuals in the trial met strict criteria. The individuals were selected specifically based on insulin resistance, and they did that using a blood test for insulin. And that can be a challenging way to approach patients because many of the blood tests in the United States that one orders from a clinical chemistry lab in a typical hospital are not very well standardized. So it's not for sure that if you order an insulin level and then compare that to a glucose level, which was what they used, something called HOMA-IR, that will give you the same classification that these investigators had. So that's one important caveat.
Okay.
Individuals with heart failure were excluded, and that's very important because individuals who take pioglitazone are likely to have the retention of fluid and may have specific effects on myocardial function that could provoke heart failure exacerbation, which would be bad. And so those are just some of the important caveats that need to be followed when you're considering the possibility of offering this therapy to individuals who are at risk for additional strokes or heart attacks.
You mentioned in the editorial that the pioglitazone and the rest of the drugs in that class have been kind of relegated, either taken off the market or relegated to special circumstances. Do you think that clinicians should change their thinking about pioglitazone as a result of this study?
Clinicians should be careful to remain open-minded, especially in the context of new data. And these are clearly new and surprising data. This class of drugs has a checkered history. The initial drug that was used was called troglitazone, and it had to be removed from the market because of substantial liver toxicity. Rosiglitazone was implicated in several serious side effects. However, long-term follow-up of rosiglitazone did not really confirm many of those side effects, although the general acceptance of that drug had fallen substantially. And pioglitazone was implicated in several side effects, including bladder cancer. But again, very long-term follow-up that continued for at least a decade did not confirm that increased risk. So practicing medicine is hard, and I think clinicians always need to be open to new information. And for the right patient in the right context, this could provide a substantial additional benefit in appropriately selected patients.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Simankovic, for your time with us today.
Well, thank you very much for asking me to comment.
That's podcast number 195, and you can find all the others at podcasts.jwatch.org. We're part of the NEJM group. Our executive producer is Kristen Kelly. Thanks so much for listening.